The button is hit. Logan's hitting the button.
We never know when we're live. Really.
We don't.
That's
we
part of the fun.
This is the problem is like they're going to catch us. Oh, hi, everyone. It's your boy, Z-Dog MD. We're live and direct with another episode of Morning Rounds with Tom and Z. What up, Tom?
What's up? I'm also a human person speaking into this microphone. So.
That's right. That makes two humanish people speaking into microphones. I'll pull up your comments here. And
So, Z, check it. I started reading the Theranos book over the weekend, and I'm about, I'm like 75% of the way, 80% of the way through it. It's called Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. It's by John Carreyrou.
Because, baby, now we got bad blood.
Exactly.
I love it.
And it is, this is one of the most riveting books I've read in a long time.
Nice.
Because it's so, all right, so obviously you know the whole Theranos story, and we've talked about it before in the news, but maybe you could synthesize it for people who don't know.
Long story short, Elizabeth Holmes dresses up like Steve Jobs, drops out of Stanford, decides she's going to start a company, not a doctor, not a medical professional, but a company that is going to take a drop of blood instead of the typical vials and vials of blood and do a panel and battery of tests simply and easily and less painfully in a just truly a story of disruption, a story of a female-led tech company and a science victory, gets a ton of backing from some of the biggest names in the world, billions of dollars if investment, and it turns out it's all a scam.
100% scam.
100.
So what's amazing is they had these devices called they had two devices. One was called the Edison and one was called the 4S after the iPhone 4S. Because when Elizabeth Holmes read the Walter Isaacson Steve Jobs book that we all read the time Steve Jobs died, employees would say that she would come out of her office and they could tell what chapter of the book she was on based on how she was aping Steve Jobs' management style at that time. So she would just come out and start giving things code names and pitting this team against the other team, you know, this kind of thing.
Oh.
But it's an amazing story about just how she was able to hoodwink people for so long. I mean, for like 15 years, basically, Theranos ran in stealth. And for people who don't know, stealth is a Silicon Valley code word for we don't have a product, we don't have a business plan, and we don't know what we're doing. That's stealth.
That's about right.
And so, you know, she ran in stealth for all these years and was able to, you know, she took money from Henry Kissinger was on the board. Mm-hmm. General Mattis was on the board. George Shultz, former Secretary of State, was on the board. You know, she had gotten the smartest people in the room, all because, really, she had a female founder story that everybody wanted to believe in. Because, okay, you had people in tech like Yahoo's Marissa Mayer or
23andMe's Anne Wojcicki.
Well, Anne Wojcicki would be a real founder, but
legit.
I mean, I think people would say she got the money from through the divorce and that kind of thing.
But they'd be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you have Sheryl Sandberg, who's Facebook COO, right? But none of them were founders. The Valley really hadn't had a female Mark Zuckerberg yet, and it really wanted one. Everybody in the Valley wanted this. And so Liz Holmes just showed up and started pretending to be one without a real product. So, okay. You know a lot about the science behind analyzing blood, right? Not as much as some of our lab peeps. But
yeah, our lab peeps will put me to shame, but the basic premise.
So there was a scientist, I think he was French or Norwegian or something like that, and he basically said that the same thing that happens in microchips in computers could theoretically be used for blood analysis to move around tiny channels of fluids, right? And so Theranos was kind of playing on this idea that they had done this. I'm a Stanford dropout, and I'm such a genius. I created this technology. What it really was they would take a single drop of blood. They had a machine that was a robotic arm with a pipette on it, and it would just go around and dump this blood in various tests and see if they could make it work. But here's the problem. One drop of blood, it's not enough, so you have to dilute it. Then you run the first panel, and it doesn't. You get a result that's really not accurate because you diluted your panel so heavily.
Right.
Right. Then you get to the second panel. There's not even enough blood. You can't run a second one. And they were promising investors. They were like, we have 800 tests. Mm-hmm. So how are you supposed to run 800 tests when you don't even have enough blood for the first test? So what they did was they bought a bunch of Siemens blood analyzers, just, you know, a third-party vendor. These are common analyzers that are in any lab in the country. And they would dilute it and run the test that way. What's scary about this is this was not just some startup in R&D phase. They got through to, they had a pilot with Walgreens.
Yep.
And so these were in Walgreens across the Southwest.
The same Walgreens that will not sell xylitol products from our sponsor, Spry. Spry, putting xylitol in pretty much freaking everything. No, it's amazing. So they were actually processing blood from patients and affecting outcomes.
Yes. And so, like, for instance, if you ran a standard potassium test on one of these Siemens analyzers, which is hilarious, Siemens.
Yeah, analyzer. Siemens. Blood, Siemens,
If you ran a standard potassium test, you would get a result of, like, 20, let's say, right? And if you ran the same thing with Theranos's diluted version, because they only used a single drop of blood or two or three drops of blood, you would get a result of 10, right? Which is like...
Which, by the way, both are fatal.
Right, exactly.
Because you don't know the reference range. But yeah, just for the homies out there, let's say 3 and 6.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you would think that you're highly deficient in potassium or whatever it is.
Right.
And they were everybody at the company had this, you know, the Silicon Valley ethos of let's move fast and break things, which works great when you're creating a stupid website for nobody, right?
Yeah,
like when you're doing Facebook, it's like, yeah, Mark Zuckerberg did teach himself to code at 12 and he created a website. But you can't really teach yourself complex microbiology at 19 as a college dropout. It just doesn't work that way.
She was living the dream, man.
Right.
And here's the funny thing. So when I spoke at TEDMED in 2013. In 2014, they invited me back as like a distinguished guest.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to pay the $5,000 to go sit there with a bunch of douchebag thought leaders mentally masturbating and circle jerking each other over stuff that probably is never going to actually impact the world. But that's what these conferences are like. So I go, I'm backstage eating all the free like fancy organic Nutri-Grain bars and weird shit with like, you know, flaxseed in it. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, oh my God, there's so much disruption. And I'm like, you don't even know what that word means. All right. So what happens? Liz Holmes goes up. She's 2014, shows up on stage. The air is sucked out of the entire place. Like it all is going into that room. And I'm watching on a monitor backstage eating this fucking flaxseed bar. Just like, look at this chick, man. Man, that's a nice turtleneck though. I'm watching and I'm like, well, let's see what's going on. Cause I had just been in the Theranos booth. They sponsored the thing too. So they sponsor TEDMED and they go and speak there. I got my finger sticked, a very nice phlebotomist lady who was kind of a mini phlebotomist because all she did was go kunk, and they said, we'll send you your cholesterol results by email through this Theranos app. I had the app on my phone. Like 2 weeks later, I got my results, like cholesterol's whatever. I was like, I have no ability to confirm this. I don't have a gold standard test. So she goes on, everyone is just like, oh, Liz Holmes, you can hear them all talking. It's just like the biggest thing in the world. And I was like, I remember thinking at the time, I'm like, this feels like a scam to me. There's something not right. It's kind of like how I felt about Eugene Goo the first time I heard him doing this thing in the OR, taking a knee and all that. I'm like, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
Something feels wrong. My elephant is angry about this. And it had nothing to do, I don't think. Maybe I had implicit bias because she was a female. I don't think so. If a dude had gone up there with a turtleneck and tried to be Steve Jobs done that shit, I actually probably would have shat on him more. I think the bias went the other way.
I think if anything, she got away with it. Yeah, she got away with it a lot longer because it's sort of reverse sexism.
Right.
So you don't want to
think. You want her to succeed.
Exactly.
You're like, it's a great story.
And that's why none of the investors in the Valley did their due diligence. Mm-hmm. Nobody basically looked into, does this machine work, right?
Like, do you think, Tom, that like they're just so desperate to have a female success story because they have been so shitty at equality of opportunity for women in general in that space that they're like, you know what? I'm willing to lose billions as long as she puts on a good show. You know, it'll make us look like we, you know, care about equal opportunity.
100%. And now everybody has egg on their face. So here's an interesting anecdote from the book is George Shultz, former U.S. Secretary of State, you know, is sort of a senior statesman at this point in his career, and he's an investor in Theranos, and he's on the board. He gets his grandson, Tyler Shultz, a job at Theranos. Tyler is like fresh out of college, and he starts asking questions basically around Theranos and is like, yo, none of this shit makes sense. Oh. And he asked them, he's like, how does this machine get this result? Like some result, I think it was said 95%, right? Mm-hmm. On whatever test they were running. He goes, how does this get this result? And they go, well, here's the thing. We run this machine 100 times and then we pick out the 10 results that worked. And, that's how we get to 95%. It's like, oh, he has enough, you know, knowledge to be like, so you're just cherry picking this data. And they're like, no, we don't cherry pick it. It's a reversion to the mean and whatever, you know. And so he goes to Grandpa Schultz and he tells him, he goes, this is all bullshit. Like, you're going to lose all your money. And not only that, but I, you know, he left the company and they're threatening me with lawyers, wow. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
And Grandpa Schultz is like, this is very interesting, Tyler. And he ambushes him with Theranos lawyers, come down from upstairs. And they go, Tyler, we need you to sign this affidavit saying you will never blah, 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 and, you know, et cetera. And he's like, I'm out. Fuck this. And so he goes and gets his own legal counsel. And they start bullying him legally because they had this guy, Boyce, David Boyce, who's one of the top litigators in the country. This guy did the prop, he got rid of Prop 8.
In California,
he's done a bunch of high level litigation, and he's got a relationship, or what's the word?
Financial
I'm looking for? Reputation.
Oh,
he's got a reputation. Sorry,
that's a far
that
away
was,
from it.
That was way off.
Yeah,
I have a newborn. I don't sleep. People.
That's true. Also, a small stroke.
He has a reputation for being hyper aggressive and using hyper aggressive tactics. So he starts having people tailed, and everybody who left Theranos is now getting they have private investigators going through their trash. They're looking into them. They're bullying them. They're telling them they need to sign these affidavits saying, you know, they have these like crazy NDAs they all had to sign.
Wow.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
But it's interesting because why is Boyce doing this? Why is he being so aggressive towards this one company who's not even that big of a client for him? It's because he took Theranos stock. So he's on the board too, and he has a vested interest.
In seeing it succeed. When the house of cards falls, his payment goes down. Well, Adeline T says you should also mention one of the chief scientists committed suicide was harassed by Holmes and her boyfriend. Her boyfriend is that Indian dude, right? Sonny,
I forget his last
name. Sonny came home from the mission.
There's a lot of interesting shit about him. So, you know, he was basically like COO. He didn't really have a title. He was kind of like vice president of whatever the fuck I feel like, right?
Hey, I've had that title.
And he'll just walk around and, you know, bully the employees basically, because a lot of the employees were Indians who were on H-1B visas.
So let me interrupt for a second.
Yeah.
This is a common tactic in the United States that Indian
It's almost people, like indentured servitude.
It's an Indian. So this happens in medicine. So I used to work in, where was it? I better not say because it's going to get someone arrested. I used to work in a town where there were a lot of Indian doctors, and what this one guy would do, he was a big business guy. Mm-hmm. So what he would do, he was a cardiologist, would just run this mill, hire a bunch of other docs, nurse practitioners, PAs, run this empire, and then just kind of make all this money. One of the things he used to do is he would bring in people on the visas or coming, you know, as foreign international medical graduates, finishing residency, et cetera. And he would make them staff a bunch of stuff and threaten them with deportation if they didn't work for basically nothing.
Right, because if you lose your job, you're out of the country.
Exactly.
So you can really, you know, this is a Damocles over these people that you can really hang over their head.
It's a kind of brown-on-brown violence.
Yeah.
So he was really taking advantage of his own tribe, his own people. And it's inexcusable. And I remember I would spread this knowledge far and wide locally. But
and all reports on this Sonny guy was that he was the typical asshole like that, and that he had the indentured servant attitude that a lot of Indian males have who have come over from India, right?
Right.
Like, he felt like his employees were his servants.
Right,
and
he
would look at their time cards to see when everybody punched in. And
right.
He'd be trying to suss them out. What's funny is the engineers figured out how to game Sonny.
Yeah.
And so they would send him emails that were over 500 words because they knew he had such bad ADD he wouldn't read them. So it would buy you like weeks that you wouldn't have to deal with Sonny
Sonny.
Your grill. But the most interesting part of the story is Liz Holmes and Sonny are fucking each other. They're in a romantic relationship. And so, you know, that's something that you need. You don't have to disclose it because it's a private company.
Right.
But it's a little weird when you go to work there and it's not been talked about. And then you find out that this guy who's bullying you and that your CEO are romantically involved.
That's an intractable ethical conflict,
right,
when
exactly.
You're managing people and yet just happen to be par for the course at this company. You know, I mean, the whole thing was such a clusterfuck. And the fact that, again, people wanted to buy into this.
Yes.
Everybody, but you know, the lab people in the lab were they were like, this is bullshit from day one.
Yeah, from day one.
Everybody was like, how can that be?
Well, here's the thing, too. She wouldn't let the chemist and the engineers talk to each other.
Oh, my God.
So, like, the chemists were like, this shit doesn't work.
Yeah.
And the engineers were like, yeah, this shit doesn't work. And they weren't allowed to get together and be like, hey, why doesn't this shit work? Because it's impossible. We're basically doing something that's impossible. And it's like, it's so easy to sell somebody a dream that sounds amazing, right? You know, oh, all we need is a tiny finger prick of blood. Everybody wants to believe.
Everybody's afraid of needles. They don't want to go and get the blood drawn. If I could get it, when I had it done, it was so easy. I was like, oh, this is cool, but right. I don't believe it.
But extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Yeah.
And nobody, look, there was no evidence.
It's hard enough. Look, a blood glucometer.
Yeah.
Is so freaking inaccurate based on a drop of blood. It's so inaccurate. It's like, you know, that's why we send it to the lab if you want a real number, because the lab is the gold freaking standard. Now, in disruption, you know, Tom, like you start out with not great quality and you start to improve rapidly. But what you start out with that is disruptive is low cost, easy convenience, easy access.
Right.
So maybe everyone thought, well, maybe that's what it is. It's just not going to be perfect yet, but it'll get there because the fundamentals of the technology are valid. Turns out not true. It's like the fire festival of freaking labs. Like the guy was like, you know, McFarland or whatever.
Yeah.
That's what she was like, except in a slightly more autistic way.
There's so much Schadenfreude when you watch go down because it's so amazing to watch tech elites lose their money this way.
It is adorable.
You know what I mean?
It is adorable.
It's hilarious.
So here's an interesting story, and I'm going to anonymize it as much as I can. So we happen to know a female tech entrepreneur who's very well known, and we asked her, well, what was the deal with Liz Holmes? Because it seems like you guys are cut from a similar cloth in the terms of your leaders in a space and in the Silicon Valley. And she told me, she goes, oh yeah, we knew each other. Yeah, we've had dinner. Yeah. And there was something really, really, really off. From the beginning.
Right.
A kind of a paranoia, a kind of almost like a schizotypal paranoia.
Well, and you know, it's interesting. In the book, they make the point that this paranoia, it strengthens the narrative because, you know, there was 20 security guards at Theranos. Two of them were personal bodyguards for Liz Holmes. They had bulletproof windows. And basically, Theranos was under extreme lockdown. They moved into the old Facebook building and they were on extreme lockdown at all times. So when you go there to visit and you're a potential investor, it seems like these people have really, world-changing IP that they're trying to protect, right? Instead of they just have one paranoid, crazy CEO.
And a world-changing secret that they're trying to protect.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, so what is it about the culture of the Silicon Valley? Because I know it quite well that you think is contributing to this, according to the book. I mean, did they talk about like Palo Alto and?
Well, yeah. It's interesting because he does talk about how insular Palo Alto is, right? Mm. Like, you know, Liz Holmes, Theranos had rented or leased a Stanford building from Stanford Med. You know, one of her Stanford medical, or not Stanford Med, she was Stanford chemist? I forget what she was going for. But, you know, that's another thing they said. When you listen to Liz Holmes talk, she doesn't talk like somebody in the field. She talks like a high school chemistry student because she'd be like, you know, here's the thing. We take an advanced chemistry and we put it. Oh, this is the other thing, too. She had a crazy deep voice, but it wasn't real. It was an affected voice. Because,
really?
Yeah, people. She had just a normal young girl's voice, right? And she realized people weren't taking her seriously at a certain point. So she started talking like, well, I'm Liz Holmes and I just want to change the world. And so, here's why.
So she took our advice about vocal fry, don't do it.
Yes.
She was like, you know, we're going to build some chemistry. And then someone was like, no, you can't talk like that.
It worked.
Wow.
For a long time. It worked.
Wow.
You know?
That's insane. By the way, Janet's asking, what's the title of the book? It's called Bad Blood.
Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. And HBO is coming out with a documentary in early March.
Who's playing Lizzie?
No, it's a documentary.
Oh, it's a documentary. She's playing herself.
Well, when they do, Alex Gibney is the guy who's doing the documentary who did, he's done everything. He did Enron's Smartest Guys in the Room.
Oh, right.
So he's going to crush this documentary out of the park, right?
That's awesome.
But when they come out with the movie version, Adam McKay is directing it, who did The Big Short and Vice recently, and Jennifer Lawrence is going to be playing Liz Holmes.
Oh, that's amazing.
So she's going to do a killer job. Like, the movie of this is going to be amazing. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Dude, that's amazing. It's going to be the Hunger Games lab edition.
When you read this book, I was like, I'm not going to read this. I'm going to wait for the documentary, right?
Yeah.
I don't have 11 hours to go through this book on Audible. But then I was like, I started reading it. There's so many insane details in this book. Oh, you know what gosh. I mean? It's just amazing.
I will now. Okay, now I really want to read this book or listen to the audiobook because this is fascinating. It's a good cautionary tale. It's also a good tale about how culture and our own biases can lead us to folly. So this idea that we actually want... We want this thing to succeed. We want the disruption in the space. We want less needles. We want a female entrepreneur to rock the world. Well, it turns out there are female entrepreneurs actually rocking the world. Yeah. We don't need a fake one, right?
Yeah.
You know? And there's plenty of fake guys. So again, the Fire Festival is a great example. That guy, what's his name? Billy McFarland. And you mean the visionary behind Magnesis, Tom?
Yo, somebody get Ja Rule, find out how he feels about all this, man.
He's like,
I need to make sense of this.
He's like, yo, it wasn't, I wouldn't call it fraud. It was more like, false advertising. I'm like, Ja, those are both crimes.
That's from, if you guys haven't seen the Fire Festival documentary on Netflix, tremendous. You should watch it.
Just tremendous.
You know, what is going on in the culture that there's all this fake it till you make it kind of stuff?
Oh, it's been going on forever. It in Vegas.
It seems to be more, though.
It's more, but also we're in Vegas where fake it till you make it is like a piece of the thing. Like your buddy who just called you up or whatever, right? And, you know? He's like, oh, this is the thing, man.
Blowing a bunch of
smoke up your ass about how successful he is. And it turns out, you know, he's living on the street.
I had an insane friend from college call me recently, and he was like, I was like, hey, man, how are you doing? You know, what's up? You know, he's like, I'm killing it, bro. I'm making millions. I'm fucking crushing it. Meanwhile, I talked to Logan, who saw him 8 months ago at like a burrito place, and he was like, yeah, I'm straight up homeless, dude. And I was like, where are you based at right now? He was like, I'm global, dude. I'm fucking global. I was like, well, where are you right now? What's your physical location? What are your coordinates, bro? I'm global. You just got to catch me where I'm at, bro.
See, I appreciate people like Ethan who are like, I own an Isuzu Rodeo and not much more. All right? I'm going to tell you who I am. I'm me. That's the way you want. So earlier I posted about, let's take some comments that you want us to talk about on this live show because we're going to be on in an hour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so we have a few. You want to hit some of those?
Let's do it.
Why not? Because I think the Theranos thing is freaking amazing. People are going to read the book and come back. We'll do another show on that. So, by the way, what else was I going to say? One Seek.
Ooh.
Big music video coming out like tonight or tomorrow. We're waiting on this potential sponsor. If they don't sign up today, I don't care. I don't want their money. I just want to put the video out. So here's the thing. Spella Dillard says, we know hospitals don't get reimbursed for readmissions when patients are admitted with the same diagnosis within 30-ish days. How then is it okay when some patients are non-compliant? We can educate them to death, help with resources, you name it, but they still don't do their part. So this is the central thing about the measurement industrial complex, Tom. They measure us on these things that are often beyond our control. They are the social determinants of health, their patient education, there's the education system, the welfare system, all these other things that contribute to failure for patients to get stuff done. It's kind of like when I did the video, it's your fault if your kid is obese.
Right.
What I was saying is, it's your fault if now I've told you that putting Dr. Pepper with sugar in it in your kid's sippy cup, which I've seen you do, mom, is a terrible idea, and that's why the kid is fat, not because he has bad genes or a glandular problem.
Right.
All right. Now, there may be those things, but in your case, it's entirely your decision. Now, as a hospital, I get penalized as healthcare advisor. I get penalized if you don't do well because it means I didn't do my job. But the thing is, a lot of times it's not just me. A lot of times it's the entire societal-technical surroundings of that patient that has failed, but we are held accountable
right.
for human stuff. And the social determinants of health, which we don't directly control, we medicalize our social problems, and then we're held accountable. Now, I think that's why measurement industrial complex is going to fail, because you can game those things.
Well, yeah, because what you measure is what you end up optimizing for.
That's right.
Right.
So if you're measuring readmissions, you'll optimize for not having people come back. And you know what that does? There's some evidence, early evidence, and I don't remember the exact trial, that more people die.
Yeah.
So in other words, we can set it up so that it's harder for you to come back. But maybe you need to come back because we haven't fixed the fundamental problem, which is bad diet, food, desert, poverty, lack of safety so you can't exercise, lack of access to the pharmacy to get your meds, so therefore, quote, non-compliance, which now we're trying to PC that term into non-adherence, Tom.
Oh, because really?
Because you just didn't adhere to our mutually decided plan. It's not about complying.
Why are we trying to rob everybody of personal responsibility?
See, yeah.
You need personal responsibility.
I think
if you make a general statement on the internet nowadays, right, where you'd be like, everybody should take care of their kids, right? Somebody will come out in the comments and it'll be like, what if you was attacked by a spider monkey and he punched out your eyeballs and now you're blind? What about that? Because that happened to me. And you're like, okay, well, shit, I don't know.
It happens every time. Right. When I do the piece on, and look, personal responsibility is important as at least an illusion that we have some degree of free will and control, because you have to hold people accountable for their decisions. Otherwise, they won't make good decisions.
Right.
But the second thing is you do also hold the system accountable and you go, there are social determinants, there are other things. So we're saying there's a nuanced center of ground, but ignoring any part of that equation, you'll lead to failure.
Yeah, and I actually probably think there's less nuance than you do. I think that everybody should have 100% personal responsibility.
Yeah, see, we'll disagree.
Basically,
on that.
100%. What would be your percentage of responsibility you think you should have for your own personhood?
I think, well, this is a very loaded question.
I'm going to say 100. Actually, I'll say 99, just to be a dick. PC.
I'm going to say this because I think we've talked about free will before. Free will is an illusion, and we're the sum total of all these processes that are conditioned, genetic, environmental. So really, we don't have true agency. But if we don't believe we have agency. In other words, if we don't operate under the assumption that we have accountability, we will not make right decisions. So the short answer is 35%.
Typical liberal elitist 35%
bullshit. 35% personal responsibility. 70, what's the 65% systems, architecture, education, environment, blah, blah, blah.
I don't believe any of that. I'm going to stick at 100%.
All right.
Yep. I took away my 1%. Hey,
you're
up to
doubling
100%.
Down. That's yeah. Right, because I triggered your elephant. Now you're like, no, now it's zero.
Well, here's the thing. Even if it's not actually 100%, I think people should behave as though it's 100%.
Well, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I actually agree with you. But individuals should behave as if it's 100%, but here's the downside of that. I don't think we should be judgy and retributive in the way we go. So in other words, our criminal justice system is based on retribution. It doesn't make sense if we don't really have free will. We should make it on rehabilitation and preventing and deterring future crime. Mm-hmm. So if the death penalty works to defer future crime, then it's great. If it doesn't, then we shouldn't use it.
Right.
And I actually don't know the answer to that because I haven't looked into that. But I think the same goes with this. So we can operate under holding people accountable, but at the same time, for example, you're a fuck up. Let's say you're a total fuck up, Tom Heineberg, which is only 70% correct since we're working in percentages. True. Do I blame you for being a piece of shit that doesn't hold your shit together?
100%, yeah.
See, I would say, Tom was raised in a difficult situation as a mom with mental illness. He's got a lot of stuff he's dealing with. He's doing the best he can. I bet I could help him do better by holding him accountable in some degree publicly and saying, Tom, you know what? You need to get your shit together because now you have a kid and a wife and it's very important. Yeah. But at the same time, in my mind, I'm thinking he's doing the best he can and he couldn't behave any other way, molecule for molecule, the way he is. But we can help him get better. He can surround himself with better people. We can help contribute. So that's the way I see it.
See, that's a bad example, though, because I actually do have all those things in real life, and yet, look at me, I'm responsible. I'm responsible for a ton of people in my life, more so than myself, because when you have responsibility, it ripples outward, because almost nobody is fucking responsible for themselves.
But so why does it ripple outward? Because
it ripples outwards because the people that are around me will drag me down if I, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I have to be responsible for my mentally ill mother because there are no services for her, first of all. There's no way to help her. And then if she goes off and runs her car off a bridge or does X, Y, and Z, it's going to negatively impact my life, right?
Right.
Or like there are people who I have in my life, like my mother-in-law, who, you know, don't have any money. Like they're 60 whatever years old. They don't have any money. So if I don't fucking buy them a house, which I did, then I'm never going to... I'm going to have to hear about it every goddamn day of my life. So it negatively impacts my life.
Right. But that's perfect. It means that causes and conditions outside of you are impacting the way you behave. So personal responsibility for you is making sure your life stays in order by taking care of these people.
That's everybody's personal responsibility,
right,
though.
But so I guess what I'm saying is that is personal responsibility. In a way, it is the result of all these outside causes and conditions and your own way of dealing with them, but who's the author of that? Who's the agent of that? Is there a you in there making those decisions, or is it just happening?
No, I make those decisions because every day I think, fuck this, I want to move to Bermuda and not do any of this. And every day I persevere.
Right, right.
So yes, it's me making those decisions.
Right, but who's the I?
Me. Tom Heineberg.
Who is me?
I make those decisions every day.
There's a little guy in there pulling the levers, yeah?
See, I think that this actually is just a cognitive elite sensibility mm-hmm. where you think everybody is fucking stupid and I have to take care of them. And so what we should do is have a big system in place for all the idiots, right? So that looks like something like, we're going to give them universal basic income and we're going to legalize weed so they can all sit around and get high and watch whatever stupid TV they want while we go run the world, right? Mm. I don't believe that. Mm. I have more of a conservative vantage point where I'm like, everybody get your shit together. Everybody. Mm. Not just people that are smart. Dumb people get your shit together too.
But that's a similar elitist attitude saying, hey, I have my shit together. You should get your shit together. And I'm going to influence you to get your shit together. You're architecting a system. Like even now by doing this podcast.
But I'm not saying everybody should be handsome millionaires like me. I'm just saying that everybody should do the best they can mm-hmm. where they are with what the tools and resources they have available to them. And shit, I don't see that happening very much at all. Do you?
Oh, well, I'll tell you where I agree with you is as a purported liberal elite, according to you.
Yeah.
The way true. I agree with you is
limousine liberal.
Limousine liberal. I'd love to have a limo. Could you imagine just owning a limo and just driving around in it?
I will point you all back to a live cast that he did where he was in a limo.
Oh, yeah.
That got tagged on the freeway.
I got rear-ended on like a dangerous Chicago thoroughfare where there had been shootings.
Listen, Logan's never been in a limo. You are elite. See? Mm-hmm.
You're right. You're right. You know what's interesting is how the elite don't believe in personal choice, but people who are struggling do.
Yeah.
What do you think that's about?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. Because when you're, the only person who's going to help you is you when you're struggling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
Maybe.
The elite also never talk about God either. They only talk about money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Depends on which elite we're talking about.
It's only when you're struggling that you start to talk about God a lot.
See, these are really fundamental questions, actually. And yeah, what am I trying to say here? Because this is stuff I think about quite routinely. People need to believe they have free agency and be held accountable. They need that.
Yes.
Otherwise, they will not. So there are a lot of people who behave, and I'm going to say this, I'm not saying they are pieces of shit. I'm saying they behave like pieces of fucking trash.
Yeah.
And they don't take care of their kids. They don't hold down a job. They want to be, doing all these other things. But why is that? Because we have causes and conditions around them that allow that, that encourage that, that actually maybe diminish personal responsibility for whatever that is, whether it's real or illusory. That entity, that organism is felt to believe that this is the way I have to behave in order to get through the world.
Don't you think personal responsibility, though, is the ability to stem the tide, to stand in the flow of that river of things that are around you and resist?
Yeah. Well, and you
can everything in life that's worth having, everything. A good relationship, children, financial health, physical health. It's just a combination of diligence, effort, time, and patience, right? And you'll get whatever you want in this life.
Okay, so I agree with you 100%. Where do that diligence, effort, time, and patience come from if our mind is really this collection? It's not one mind. It's a collection of processes that are each trying to compete for conscious attention.
Right.
So people will say those executive functions, if I'm going to be diligent, I'm going to choose this illusory I is going to sit down and choose. Really, it's we, these processes. It's a consensus among these minds through repetition, through exposure to ideas and saying, like if I listen to Tom saying, listen, I need to get my shit together and have personal responsibility, if enough sub minds are tuning in, they're going to listen and say, you know what? Yeah, okay, we all agree. We're going to sit down today and we're going to write that script we never got around to writing. And then that feeds on itself because those intentions create more intentions that then create action. But again, it's almost like this neuronal storm that you are influencing. It's not necessarily a little guy behind a curtain pulling the strings. Meditation is actually a way to see the storm and go, oh, I'm going to actually create a consensus to do things that I have decided by consensus are better for the organism. The whole system. But really, we're saying the same thing. It's just framing it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the framing matters.
It does matter, yeah. No, I agree with you.
People can take control of their own lives if you tell them that they're able to take control of their own life, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like, hey, man, it's just, some of you just came out fucking stupid.
Yeah.
That's on you.
There is a downside to this philosophy, though. So in other words, your approach, the downside is people who have been the sort of have had a lot of bad luck, or have made decisions that are regrettable, there can be a lot of self-blame if you take it all as this was my fault, this is my responsibility, whereas you could say it's a combination. I choose to be a different person in any given waking moment, and that is on me, but what happened before is dead. I'm dead to the past. You know,
yeah.
The beginning starts.
I think that self-blame is a necessary part of maybe the early cycle of taking responsibility. I think later on you can get over that, but yeah, in the beginning, like, you should blame yourself because really it's you who find yourself in this position. It isn't society. Society didn't put you in this position. Yeah, there are sugary drinks at every gas station across America. You can walk 100 feet and get to a new sugary drink, right? But it's your choice to go into that store and buy that drink and put that in your body. That's just you. It's not the societal conditioning around you. It's you. You made the choice.
That's what you're going to tell people. Yeah. See, and I
that's
would...
the truth, though.
Well,
that's the truth.
Who is the you? That's the question.
Them. The person who walked in to buy the soda.
That's where I think, and again, a lot of philosophy, meditation, those kind of things, well, this you is a bit of a construct. Right now, the question is, where's the construct coming from? It's all these unconscious causes and conditions.
Listen, here's the other thing about being, you know, on the libertarian side of things. I don't care. Like, if you want to do that to yourself, I don't care. Right? That's your personal, that's your freedom. Like, you're allowed to drink sugary drinks until you die. I don't care. I'm not going to give you health care. Like, I don't want to pay for you to do that. I don't want that taken out of my pocket, but...
Well, in a way, then you're also saying you want to game a system that doesn't encourage bad behavior,
yeah.
which is also what I'm saying. So I'm saying, well, you know what? We should make it a little less easy to get sugary stuff and easier to get fruits and vegetables in, say, impoverished communities that suffer more from diabetes.
Okay, now we get to the role that government should actually be playing, which is like actually regulating the market, right? So if capitalism is just going to percolate up things that are terrible for people... Government is that their job is to put a filter on that and be a regulator for that. Yet they don't often do it.
They don't do it well.
We still have cigarettes are still legal.
Yeah, I know.
Which is crazy.
Why? Because
why are cigarettes legal?
The tobacco lobby pretty much owns a lot of Congress.
Right.
Any southern state.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. We have a dysfunctional system. In a perfect system, it could work, right? Yeah. I mean, you could see how government put the brakes on, but then you have an emergent competition system and U.S. would live up to its ideals of this beautiful system of open, efficient markets, regulated without cheating, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it before, but you can't get diet drinks in the hood. If you're trying to get even a diet, like Diet Coke maybe be the only thing you find there, but if you're trying to get like something that's Vitamin Water Zero, whatever these new drinks, you cannot find them in the ghetto. You can only find sugary drinks in the ghetto.
Right, and you could even make the argument that diet sodas are not a great idea, but you have to do incremental change.
Yeah. That's when I go full bore too and just get an RC Cola, because RC Cola
is
bomb.
Is the jam.
it's a very hard question. Like.
Doug Farrago just wrote in. He says, you guys are ugly and suck.
How dare you, Doug Farrago?
You know what, Doug Farrago, you bitch-ass bitch. We actually, Doug's a friend of ours. Doug's a great primary care physician, direct primary care out on the East Coast. Doug created the precursor to ZDog Industries, which is the placebo journal.
This is true.
So it was because back then you would print a magazine and send it to subscribers. And he had something like 10,000 print subscribers for this comedy journal. And I have the entire archive.
I'm going to go on record and say that I met Doug Farrago in real life and he smells.
He's a bitch, right? I'm telling you. And again, it's not libel because it's spoken. It's slander. Right in, Doug, you bitch-ass bitch. Oh, there he is. And I am between patients, says Doug Farrago. See? He doesn't have the time to take a shit on us because he's actually seeing patients. Let's see. The rich should not get the best health care. The best should be available to anyone, Jane Davies. Well, see,
disagree. Strong disagree.
The problem with that, I agree we should have, everyone should be covered. The question is, first of all, what's the best?
I think the rich should get the best healthcare first, which they do because they're subsidizing it. They're paying for these new procedures, right? And then if it works, it will percolate downstream.
See, I think like this idea of the best being expensive is wrong. Like, I think the best healthcare is cheap. The best healthcare is just preventing disease and, you know, better nutrition, better education. So yeah, you can get the best elective hip replacement first as a rich person, the Robo 2000 with the titanium dingus in it. But you could prevent the hip for much cheaper.
You know, I think the thing with we see a lot of people who are envious of the wealthy in today's day and age. And it's like, you know, there's really, it's not that great. I've been around a lot of wealthy people, and what do? They drive a slightly nicer car than you. They take a slightly nicer vacation than you, and their house is a little bigger than yours. That's about it. Otherwise, we have ubiquity of consumption. Everybody has the same iPhone in their pocket. Everybody's wearing the same shoes. And eventually, yeah, everybody will get the same healthcare.
Well, you know, there's data that shows that $70,000 a year is the upper limit of where returns diminish.
Happiness.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's true. Maslow's hierarchy, if you're not fulfilling, if you're living on the street,
right,
that's a problem. But once you reach 70 grand, everything else is fluff. And I can say, having gone through that transition from residency where I was making 35 grand to my first year post residency where I was working for a couple startups and doing moonlighting, I made probably 125 grand that first year out. This was 2002. It's a huge, huge happiness transition.
Well, it's your runway. You know, like you have a longer runway now, right? Like when you're living day to day, that's horrendous.
That's horrendous
for anybody. When you're living week to week, it's still really bad.
Yeah.
And even when you're month to month, it's terrible.
Yeah.
When you have like, let's say a year of savings, right, you walk around with this like quiet confidence of like, fire me. I don't give a shit.
Well, now you can actualize yourself.
Exactly.
You get to the top levels of Maslow. You can sit around reading philosophy and debating with Tom
about
whatever. But you know, the thing is,
you know how you get there's a personal responsibility.
I thought it was universal basic income, Tom.
No, you save your money and spend less than you make.
Tom is right. But the thing is, people don't even have the basic education on finances. If you grow up with a dad who doesn't fucking spend his money on alcohol and hookers, what are your chances of understanding how to spend money? They're pretty low, right? At least you know, you had a wonderful father who actually was very conservative with money.
Yeah.
Meaning he would teach you that.
Yeah. Well, no, I've always said that it wasn't the equity, because I didn't receive much equity until my father died. And now I manage that on behalf of my mother, who's probably going to drain it all because we have no mental health services in this country. So, you know, it really wasn't equity.
Because we medicalize our social
health. It was knowing how things actually work and how compounding works and how, you know, how money really works. Like, I mean, it doesn't get taught. Yeah, I think we should have a class in school where you teach that. But like, why don't we teach it? Because you need everybody to want that dollar and to want to go to work. So you incentivize, that's a societal thing where you incentivize people, you know, to spend every dollar they make.
Right.
And then go to work to earn more.
Advertising.
Right. You're never going to out-earn your own stupidity.
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, and like, you know, Kieran here says, sucks, made $48,000 last year, went to school for this. And this is the problem. So again, and that $70,000 number might have changed with inflation, but the bottom line is, here's the punchline. Now I make more than that because I've been working for so many years. My wife is also a physician. We work really hard. We save our money. And yet the level of happiness from that money is the same. What it allows us to do is an independence to do what we're doing now, which is something we feel is purposeful. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, well, I don't have to see patients every day because guess what? I've saved money. So now I can take a risk in actually doing what I love, which is this platform that we have. It's, having these conversations.
Listen, it's going to suck if you're going to save your money, especially when you're not making that much money. Like when I first started out, I wasn't making that much money straight out of college. But I was still very intent on investing almost everything I made. And so me and my wife would get into literal fights, like fights in the car, you know, where one of us had gotten the guac at Chipotle. And it's like, do you think that we're made of money? The guac is $2 extra. They just raised the price.
One of my earliest fights with my wife was, we were residents and we had just met. So she'd come out of medical school and I'd come out of medical school, different places. She went to Stanford Med and I went to UCSF. We met at Stanford residency. And she goes, let's go to a restaurant. And I'm like, cool. I had my list in my head of every restaurant for which you could get a dinner for less than $10. And she had everything else because, you know, her parents were, I think, they, how do I put this? They valued education as Chinese Americans to the degree where they paid all her tuition. So that was what they do as parents. That was the value. Whereas my parents were cheap ass Indians. They valued education, but they're like, he can work. He can take loans. You go ahead. So for me, it was abject poverty, not just poverty, but debt. So I was always scrimping and saving. And then she'd be like, let's go to this place. It was like $30 a plate or something. And I'm like, you're mentally ill. There's something wrong with you. Like, we can't be together because you don't understand, I need to survive. And I was taught this by my dad, who always acts like he's going to be on the street because he came from India with nothing, right? So it's interesting. And that still pervades how cheap I am about stuff to this day.
Well, I had to, when we were just starting out, we started to make good money. You know, we were making like $100,000 a year plus. And Logan was just blowing through everything on guns and new cars and whatever he could find. And so I bought Logan the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace book, and I was like, listen, here's what you got to do, man. You got to fucking get rid of these cars and all your debt obligations, and you got to save your money, and here's, you know. And it took Logan like 3 years of me badgering him before he finally listened and was like, holy shit, do you know I've been spending all my money, Tom Heineberg? I was like, yeah, I do, man. I've been watching it happen. And then he fixed his shit, and now his net worth is in the positive and not the negative.
It's really remarkable. And we're not just making fun of Logan, although we will do that on the daily. Logan's actually better than the average American. What did you say the average American has saved?
Oh, it's 70% of Americans can't find $400 in an emergency.
That's insane.
70%.
Right.
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 Do you know how many Americans are financially independent?
How many?
2.8%.
How do you define, that's ridiculous. How do you define financial independent?
Yeah, I think financially independent was the number of Americans who were over 1.5 million net worth.
They consider that financially independent?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting cutoff.
Yeah. Well, it's a calculation of your age and your net worth, right? Because you need to have
to live
enough
to X.
money to the end of your life.
Right. So I see what you're saying.
Sometimes people use 25X, so whatever you have saved is... or whatever you spend a year you have to have 25X that in savings.
Yeah.
Because, you know, by the time you retire, usually you live about 25 years.
Yeah. Now we have a few people here commenting on the equity disparities. In other words, the difference between the very rich and the very poor is widening. The middle class is starting to get squeezed. What do you see is that a problem, or do you see?
No, see, I think that people are being too myopic about this. I think America redistributes wealth. It just does it slowly. It usually takes two or three generations once. Like, for instance, Liz Holmes, who we were talking about in the beginning. Liz Holmes' father, she's descended from the Fleischmann's Yeast Corporation dynasty, which was her great great-grandfather had made a shitload of money in the early Industrial Revolution. And by the time it got down to Liz Holmes' father, Chris Holmes, it had all been squandered, just pissed away on, you know, luxuries and living in Maui and, you know, having third wives and all this kind of stuff.
Well, that's dynastic wealth, right? But the question is, like, the very rich of the whatever 1% versus the, you know, they have, what, 50% of the...
But that's dynastic wealth, you know, just in the myopic view. Like, it will dissipate back eventually.
But to other rich people. So I guess the question is...
Not necessarily, because it all does filter down.
Does it?
Yeah.
Have we seen that happen?
Well, I think the way... Like, you can't see me if you're on the podcast, but I think if the poor are here and the rich are here, like, yes, sometimes it grows upwards, right? But a rising tide, you know, lifts all ships. Like, the poor, you know, the poor have a much better life than they did... even 30, 40 years ago. If you're poor now, you have a big screen TV and you have air conditioning and you have a car. You know what I mean? Like,
So let me understand if I understand what you're saying. You're saying, okay, the rich and the poor are separating more and more, but the poor are rising still, even though the gap is widening.
Yeah. That's not to say, though, that the system is perfect, because the system is totally fucked beyond repair.
Yeah.
And it does need to be overhauled entirely.
How would you improve the big wealth gap? Because look, I think
I would kill inflation. I would have a deflationary currency, but that's just me.
AKA a cryptocurrency.
Well, it would be Bitcoin in my worldview.
It all comes back.
Yeah. That's how I would fix it. But you know, if you look at it, just the basics, inflation is rising, and it's rising faster than people realize because of things like quantitative easing, right? So you have QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4, and now the Fed is talking about doing QE indefinitely, which just means we're going to print money indefinitely. Mm-hmm. And so when you have inflation, it robs from the poor who don't have savings because they have to keep their money in cash under the mattress. The rich pile into assets. These assets inflate, and that's how you get, you know, Bay Area real estate is at $5 million for a 2,000 square foot home. And the poor are priced out of the economy. Mm-hmm. So that's a fundamentally immoral system. And that's not capitalism, that's cronyism. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have right now. So yeah, that does need to be entirely overhauled to fix it. But America is still a place where you can get ahead, because 80% of America's millionaires are first generation millionaires. Mm-hmm. They're immigrants, they're people, they're professional people, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're bankers, they're accountants, they're business people. And they're just people who save their money.
Is there something to what people have talked about the Pareto distribution, though, that once you're wealthy, it begets more wealth, and it's very hard then to break into that upper echelon of Pareto?
Until you die and your idiot kids take it over. And,
right.
You know, they
so you're saying that's
on,
how it's redistributed.
They spend it on Ferraris. Yeah,
is dipshits.
That's
right.
How it's redistributed.
Like Bizarro Tom Heineberg would take, you know, dad's equity, and instead of giving it to his mom and managing it for her, would spend it on crack and hoes.
For instance, Anderson Cooper is a Vanderbilt. A lot of people don't know that, but his mom is Gloria Vanderbilt. And so he's descended from the Vanderbilt dynasty. Hmm. And I don't think that there's much money left. Otherwise, I don't think he'd be doing CNN. Hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What about a Gates or someone who's giving a lot of his money away to, you know, philanthropic stuff?
Yeah, I 100% support that, obviously. And a lot of people are signing the wealth pledge, Warren Buffett, Gates, Zuckerberg, et cetera, et cetera.
What about taxes as a mechanism to decrease the wealth gap?
Disagree, 100%. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, asking the government to do things is like doing a blood transfusion from the left arm to the right arm and spilling half the blood in the process. Like, the government can't do anything. They suck.
Should we have AI run government?
If we get a good enough AI, sure. Mm-hmm. But it'll probably kill us all before
That's true. Because if it's that good... Right. All
I'm
right.
just saying that people can do it, and that you, if you have personal responsibility, especially for your own self, you can do it. You can pull yourself out of low-level poverty. Extreme poverty is an entirely different matter.
That's a different matter. Yeah, that's a Pareto distribution in itself.
Those people need a helping hand.
It's a negative Pareto. Right. So in other words, you're so disadvantaged, and not just in terms of any systemic bias and those kind of things, but just purely from your own inability to have education, have safety, have support, get any of the bottom Maslows taken care of. Let's do some comments now towards the end here, 10 minutes. Cronyism, yep, my home state of New Jersey run by cronies, Linda Carroll. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Who's that fat piece of shit?
What's his name?
The guy.
Trump guy then didn't become a Trump
Chris
guy.
Chris Christie.
Chris Christie.
Yeah, Chris Christie is such a piece of shit. He embodies everything that's wrong with American politics.
I don't know enough to agree or disagree, but I just remember the picture of him on the beach during like some shutdown. Uh-huh. Or something. Gates charities do way more than a government program,
100%.
Patrick Murray. Yeah. Maybe Anderson Cooper has pride and self-worth and doesn't want to sit on his wealth, Cindy Zimmel.
I don't think there's that much wealth left in the Vanderbilt fortune, or at least not the way it was, you know, because Vanderbilt was actually a philanthropist as well, too, so he did give a lot of money away. That's why we have Vanderbilt University.
Lone CEO of a Bitcoin thing disappears in India, Linda Treen.
That's true. This dude disappeared with $500 million worth of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And he was like, oops, I died in India. And everybody's like, yeah, I don't think so, bro. He was like, yeah, I'm dead now. He was like, are you though?
Prove it.
Prove it.
Show me the body. by the way, when is Game of Thrones restarting?
Games of Thrones.
Do
you watch Games of Thrones?
Hey, you know,
it's coming back, I think, in April, right?
In April, yeah. I'm catching up on the audiobooks. I'm trying to finish all the audiobooks.
I'm so excited.
I'm on 4 out of 5.
It's the last season, people.
The audiobooks, by the way, for people who don't do Audible, they are tremendous because it's this one guy, Roy Dutrice, and he does all the voices, and he's just, like, I'm listening to it right now, and it's like, Brian walked through the forest. It's all the shit that wasn't in the show. So it's like these backstories and crazy shit, like, you know, Caitlin coming back to life as a zombie and all this neat shit. And the way he does the voices is just fucking tremendous, you know? Because, like, you know, Tyrion will be like, well, you know, father, there you are on the privy, and da da da. And then he's like, well, listen, Tyrion, put that crossbow down. Oh, I am shot. And it's just... It's a whole different way to consume the insanity that is Game of Thrones, man.
Yeah, I'm going to have to read it, but I won't.
You won't, I know.
I won't.
Well, audio it.
Audio it.
Do it on the treadmill.
Audible's dope, man. They're not even sponsoring us.
I know, they used to.
Yeah.
Those punk-ass bitches. You know what? Fuck sponsors.
You know what? Fuck Audible.
Yeah.
I take it all back.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to listen to books?
No one.
No one.
Uh-huh.
When we have movies.
Right. You know what? I'll tell you what, Z-Pack. You become a supporter on Facebook, $4.99 a month, I will read your favorite books to you and you can record it. I'll do a series of Facebook Lives where I read a book. Like, hey, you guys want to listen to Steven Pinker's new book? What's it called? The one about Enlightenment Now or whatever?
Oh, Enlightenment Now, yeah.
Yeah. And I'll read it like Roy Dotrice would read Game of Thrones. I'd be like, the thing about monetary policy is there are several components. There are, said the masses. There are. I'm loving Audible books even better than reading, says Pammy Hopper. Am I the only one who's never seen Game of Thrones, Danny Koch?
Yes, you are.
Yes, you are, Danny. Mm-hmm. You need to get on that. I resisted. Then Tom made me watch
it. It's so good.
It's really good.
It's so good.
Laura Kellenberger, it's not an equal playing field to acquire those skills to move up. There's a privilege thing that affects opportunity. I think that's a Pareto distribution. So in other words, if you're born into a lot of opportunity, it begets more opportunity.
I think it's been historically true with the white majority. I believe that. Yeah. Mm. But it's not true anymore. It was true, but it's not true anymore. And so where do we go from here is the question.
I'll agree and disagree. I'll say it's less true.
Less true.
Yeah. I think so. Well, we did stuff here, Tom.
We did a thing.
We talked about Theranos.
Yeah.
We talked about monetary policy, deflationary currencies. We talked about personal responsibility and free will. And we talked about these nuts.
Ooh.
That's right.
These nuts are warm when it's cold outside.
Every second of the night, I live another lie. Oh, by the way, guys, we need a parody idea for Nurses Week this week.
Oh, that's right.
This year. In May, Nurses Week, we do a thing every year. This year, we're going to do another thing with Board Vitals.
We've been thinking about doing 99 problems.
Yeah. I got 99.
99 patients.
99 patients, but a click ain't one.
It's like, yo, if you got safe staffing ratios, I'm mad jealous, son. I got 99 patients and they all drunk.
Come on. Yeah, you know, that may be it. Although it goes a little hard, I think, for our nurse audience, but maybe I'm wrong.
Y'all don't get down with Jigga? Hove?
I'm down with Hove.
H to the Izzo?
V to the Izze.
Fascism, my Nizzle used to dribble down in VA.
I do want to do nurses in clinic, but you won't let me do it.
Yeah, that goes really hard.
It goes hard, right? Mm-hmm. Ball so hard, other nurses can't find me. No, the doctors can't find me, right?
Yo, what's 50 clicks to a motherfucker like me? Can you please remind me?
Nurse so hard, this shit cray.
Chart so hard, this shit crazy.
That's right. Dunk, 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 dunk.
Y'all don't know I take care of old ladies.
Gets the people going.
Yo, what she order? Fish filet.
Fish filet. Turkey sandwich.
All right, let's bail.
Yeah, all right.
Let's
bail. We out. We love you guys. Bye. Thumbnail.